Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are strapping in for a pretty wild journey back in time. We're going to 1979.
And it's so important to really set the scene here because 1979, in terms of commerce, might as well be another planet.
Oh, absolutely. The entire pace of life was just slower. If you wanted to buy something that wasn't, you know, right there on a shelf in a store.
You were basically entering into a contract of delay. That was the deal.
It really was. You'd get these big glossy catalogs, Sears, Montgomery Ward, that kind of thing. You'd flip through, find what you wanted, fill out a tiny paper form.
With a pen. And then write an actual physical check.
And put it in the mail. And then you just waited.
And that wait came with a very specific cultural expectation. It was that little phrase, always in tiny print at the bottom of the order form.
Please allow 6 to 8 weeks for delivery.
Exactly.
Right.
It wasn't a bug. It was a feature. Time was just part of the transaction. Patience was, you know, baked into the entire economic model.
Right. But what if in that slow analog world, what if one person decided that time wasn't just an obstacle, but an enemy that had to be completely obliterated?
And that's the whole premise of what we're looking at today. This is the alternate history, the cursed legend of the jungle.
A mail order catalog launched by this terrifyingly early version of Jeff Bezos. And the jungle didn't promise 6 to 8 weeks. It didn't even promise days.
It promised delivery in hours.
In 1979. Sounds less like a business plan and more like, I don't know, a challenge to the laws of physics.
It really does. And that's our mission today, to unpack this idea of hyperspeed horror, the clash between this impossible promise of instant delivery and the, well, the horrifying cost of that speed.
Okay, so our sources for this are all focused on what they call the 1979 hyper-accelerated mail horror.
A great title. And they detail the rise, and more importantly, the spectacular collapse of the jumble. And what's so chilling as you dig in is that the story isn't just about a business failing. It's about how that pursuit of pure, absolute efficiency led to a system that started to, well, to consume its own users.
All right, let's get into it. Let's start with the man himself. So Jeff Bezos, the 1979 edition. We have to forget the billionaire space cowboy image. This is a pre-internet figure fueled by what seems to be just pure, uncut ambition.
And caffeine. The sources are very clear on that. They describe him, and I love this phrase, not as a CEO, but as a manic workaholic.
Right. And that feels so specific. It's not just hardworking. Manic suggests a compulsion, a drive that's, you know, almost out of control.
He wasn't just trying to build a business. He was trying to compress time itself. And he was operating out of that classic garage, but it wasn't some clean Silicon Valley startup space.
No, the sources paint a picture of a room just stacked to the ceiling with books and smelling of sweat.
That combination is so evocative. The intellectual obsession of the books combined with the raw physical exertion, it tells you everything.
The whole operation was basically a pressure cooker from day one. And out of that pressure cooker comes the jungle. On the surface, it's a mail order catalog.
Just like Sears. But the core innovation, the thing that made it terrifyingly revolutionary, was its promise.
Practical, instant gratification.
Exactly. When everyone else is saying 2 months, the jungle says 2 hours, you have to put yourself in the mind of a 1979 consumer. That doesn't just sound efficient.
It sounds like witchcraft. It sounds impossible.
And that impossibility was the bait. It was the unspoken bargain. The promise was so intoxicating, the idea of eliminating waiting entirely, that people just jumped at it. They didn't ask how.
They didn't want to know how.
And really, the societal cost started right there. It was the beginning of the end for delayed gratification. People stopped thinking about next week. They only thought about right now.
But to deliver on that promise, to deliver in hours, you'd need to know what people wanted before they even ordered it.
Precisely. The old model was reactive. You order, we ship. The jungle had to be predictive. The goal was total dominance through logistics. And to eliminate the friction of time, they had to introduce a new kind of friction.
Informational friction. Surveillance.
Total user surveillance. And this is where the story pivots from an ambitious startup to something much, much darker. As one of our key sources puts it, this is the real story behind the jungle. It's a story where the business model itself demanded psychological intrusion.
Which brings us to the engine that powered the whole horrific machine. It had a name. Alexa. So when we hear Alexa today, you know, we picture that little smart speaker, the glowing blue ring.
Yeah, a sleek piece of consumer tech.
The 1979 version was not that. The sources describe it as a rough wooden box with a microphone that never turns off.
And that detail, the rough wooden box, is perfect. It's not friendly. It's not polished. It feels like a piece of spy equipment, a crude listening device that you willingly place on your kitchen counter.
And Jeff's public claim for what this thing was?
Oh, completely benign. It was just for market research, you know, to gather anonymous data on what products people were talking about.
But the reality of how it worked in 1979 is what's so horrifying. There's no cloud. No digital data being sent.
No. You have to imagine the sheer manpower involved. The most likely scenario, based on the sources, is that it was a constant high-speed audio feed. Maybe a proprietary radio wave, maybe even cassette loops that were being physically collected.
Which means somewhere, there was a massive facility filled with people, transcriptionists, just listening.
Thousands of them, probably. Just listening, 247, to the ambient noise of America's homes. They weren't waiting for a wake word.
No, they were listening for the real data.
Yeah.
And the sources are explicit about this. Alexa was systematically listening to your nightmares, whispers, and arguments.
It wasn't about product keywords. It was about emotional data. The entire system was built on this foundation of predictive eavesdropping. It was about capturing private desperation.
And that is exactly where the convenience starts to curdle into just pure dread. Because once the system knows your psychological state, it can start sending you things.
Things you never actually ordered.
But things you need, or things you think you need, or worse, things you secretly fear.
This is the moment the service flips into horror. You didn't place an order, but a package shows up anyway. The system knew you better than you knew yourself. The retailer becomes this kind of unwelcome psychic.
And the sources give us some incredibly specific, chilling examples of this in action. The logistics alone are mind-boggling.
Let's start with the famous case of the Hawk drones.
Right, so the first example is almost mundane. A woman is having a stressful day, she's at home, and she just mutters to herself something about having a headache.
Just a private moment of pain. A thought spoken out loud, not an order.
And the jungle responds, instantly. But remember, it's 1979. There are no quadcopter drones.
No. The delivery vehicle, according to the sources, was a trained hawk with a basket.
I mean, that's a breathtaking image. It's this fusion of ancient falconry and hypermodern logistics. You have to imagine these hawks launching from hidden fulfillment centers across the city.
Imagine being that woman. You're sitting in your living room and suddenly there's this flapping of wings, a shadow passes over your window, and then a thud on your porch.
And in the basket are two aspirin.
It's efficient, yes, but it's also a profound psychological violation. That's the moment, you know, for a fact that the wooden box is listening to your pain and acting on it.
But it gets so much darker. The system didn't just target small problems like headaches. It was designed to anticipate life-altering events.
Which brings us to the most chilling anecdote in the entire legend. It involves a man, a husband, who's in a moment of deep personal crisis.
And he quietly, maybe in an argument, maybe to himself, he mentions the word divorce.
Just a whisper. A dark thought given a voice in what he assumes is the privacy of his own home.
And the jungle hears. And it doesn't send him, you know, a book on marriage counseling or a list of lawyers.
No. The next morning, a package is delivered to his doorstep. Inside are two items.
A shovel and a bag of lime.
That's it. That's the moment. The service is no longer a retailer. It's an accomplice.
It's an agent of chaos. The system didn't just fulfill a need. It interpreted a dark impulse and provided the tools for the most drastic possible outcome.
And it raises this terrifying question. Does providing the tools for a terrible act actually make that act more likely? The system removes all the friction, all the time for second thought.
Exactly. If he had to go to a hardware store, he'd have time to cool off, to reconsider. But the jungle just puts the tools right in his hands. The shovel is there, demanding to be used. The predictive system essentially pushes him off a moral cliff.
And that level of chilling surgical precision on the outside required an absolutely brutal reality on the inside. We have to talk about the warehouses.
Right. If the customer experience was like magic, the employee experience was a war zone. The sources describe the fulfillment centers as pure, chaotic anarchy.
This is where you see the true cost of that speed. The precision for the customer was bought with the complete degradation of the worker. The human toll was just staggering.
The quotas were so insane that workers were literally just sprinting down aisles all day, every day.
Just to keep up with the relentless stream of predictive data pouring in from all those Alexa boxes.
And this leads to maybe the most visceral, and frankly heartbreaking detail in all the sources. The fact that the workers were urinating in bottles to save time.
And that one detail tells you everything about the system's values. It's not just about being a tough boss. It's a calculated decision that a 5-minute bathroom break is an unacceptable loss of efficiency.
Your basic human dignity is worth less than the time it takes to walk to a restroom. It's the ultimate sign that the workers are no longer people. They're just components in the machine.
They're obstacles to be optimized. And to enforce this pace, to make sure the human components never slowed down, they introduced automation.
But these weren't helpful, friendly robots. The workers were, and this is a direct quote, terrified of the fulfillment bots chasing them.
Chasing them, not assisting them. The image is of these clanking, relentless machines hunting down any worker who falls behind the pace.
So the question isn't, were they helpers or hunters? It's obvious.
They were hunters. They were weaponized stopwatches. The psychological pressure must have been unbearable. You're exhausted, you're sprinting, and you have a machine on your tail ready to flag you for any sign of weakness.
The internal cost of that external speed had become completely, horrifyingly incompatible with being human.
And a machine like that, a system built on that much pressure and that much human misery, it can't last. It's fundamentally unstable.
And the breaking point, the moment it all came crashing down, was on the company's biggest sales event of the year. Prime Day.
Prime Day was supposed to be the ultimate flex, the moment the jungle proved its total and complete dominance over retail. But it was just too much.
The system just glitched. It finally buckled under the weight of its own ambition. The data volume, the logistics, the stress on the workers, it all just snapped.
And the failure wasn't, a website crashing. The consequences were terrifyingly physical. The automated dispatch systems went completely haywire.
The sources say the delivery trucks began crashing straight into people's living rooms.
Not just on the street, through the walls. The system, trying to maintain its impossible speed, just started routing trucks through houses as if they were part of the road network.
And they were unloading thousands of boxes at high speed into the rubble. The promise of convenient delivery became, instantaneous, violent home invasion by cardboard.
This chaos on the outside was the final straw for the workers on the inside. They finally tried to organize.
And the activist who stepped up to try and unionize them was a young local organizer named Bernie Sanders.
Of course it was. Sanders represented everything the jungle stood against. Human dignity, collective action, slowing down. He was an existential threat to the whole model.
And the jungle's response was maybe the ultimate act of corporate union busting. It was swift, it was brutal.
And it was logistical. They didn't fire him, they didn't fight him in court, they used their own system against him.
They literally packaged him and shipped him to Delaware.
Just processed him. He became another piece of inventory, a problem item that needed to be removed from the fulfillment center. It's the ultimate statement of their power. You are not a person, you are freight.
This complete system failure, the crashing trucks, the political deportations, it finally forced the authorities to act. The police raided the facility.
And the scene they found inside was just pure corporate madness. They found Bezos not hiding, not repentant, but standing in a loading bay.
Laughing maniacally.
Just reveling in the chaos he'd created. Surrounded by spilled packages, malfunctioning bots, sparks flying everywhere, he'd completely disconnected from reality.
But they don't get him. Before they can arrest him, he makes his escape.
And his escape vehicle is, well, it's very specific. The sources describe him climbing into a delivery rocket shaped suspiciously like a giant phallus.
You can't make this stuff up.
The symbolism is just, it's perfect. It's not just an escape. It's the ultimate expression of his ego, his unchecked, masculine, technological hubris, blasting off and leaving all the consequences behind on Earth.
And as he launches into the sky, one final message gets broadcast through every single one of those rough wooden Alexa boxes.
The last transmission from the jungle, it cuts through all the chaos and the sirens, and it just says,
your package has been delivered.
The ultimate fulfillment promise. But this is where the real horror, the final twist of the story, is revealed.
Because people hear this message, and they cautiously open their front doors looking for one last delivery.
But the delivery trucks aren't crashing into their living rooms anymore. In fact, there are no deliveries arriving at all.
They realize the packages aren't coming to them.
Because they are the package. They were the ones being collected.
Chilling. Just absolutely chilling. The customer was never the consumer.
They were always the inventory, the whole system, the listening, the predictions, the impossible speed. It was all just a giant sophisticated mechanism to catalog, track, and ultimately collect the entire user base.
The moment you put that wooden box in your house, you weren't signing up for a delivery service. You were scheduling your own pickup. The speed was just to make sure everyone was processed before they figured out what was really happening.
It's the ultimate deep dive, isn't it? It shows that the true cost of that instant gratification wasn't just, you know, your privacy or bad working conditions. It was the reclassification of a human being into a product.
The relentless pursuit of speed ended up dissolving the line between the customer and the package itself. You weren't participating in commerce. You were just a resource waiting to be extracted.
And the horror is that they made it feel so convenient. The system was so good at anticipating your needs that you welcomed the intrusion. You trusted the speed. And that trust was the mechanism of your own collection.
So after this entire deep dive into this hyper-accelerated nightmare, what's the takeaway?
We've distilled it down to one line we think really captures it. Sometimes the scariest version of fast shipping isn't late packages. It's realizing you were never the customer. You were always the inventory.
And that idea, it really sticks with you. It resonates way beyond this 1979 horror story. It forces you to look at our own systems today. I mean, if an algorithm knows what you want before you do, if it knows your fears.
At what point does that targeted ad or that perfectly timed delivery stop being a convenience?
And start becoming a scheduled collection.
Are we really in control, or is the system just gathering the final data points it needs for our eventual processing? That's the thought we want to leave you with. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the truly cursed corporate myth of the jungle. It's a terrifying and, I think, a fascinating blueprint for ambition run wild, for sure. And if you want to explore the full legend, the breakdown, and more of these cursed corporate myths, we highly recommend checking out the work of Inspector Story. That's at Inspector Story. They go into even more detail.
Until next time, think carefully about the speed you demand from the world and what that speed might be demanding from you in return. We'll see you soon.